one thing that I take religiously, probably like every minimum, like every 2 hours, that costs nothing, is hot water. That's like my, and even now, it's like within arm's reach, is my trusty flask.
And
woohoo! 80% of the time, I'm just only drinking hot water. No lemon, no tea, because tea actually dehydrates you. So it actually has the opposite effect of hot water. And I've cut out coffee for a year now. But, you know, the number one key to health and good skin and all that stuff is to, like, have your digestive tract flowing. And the best thing for digestion is hot water, period.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Nutri Podcast, where we celebrate the power of Eastern wellness. I'm your host, Stephanie Tan. Today's episode is with the incredible Sarah Jane Ho, etiquette expert, host of Mind Your Manners on Netflix, and co-founder of Antivorda Labs, a new intimate care brand inspired by traditional Chinese medicine. Sarah has this beautiful way of blending East and West, from how we carry ourselves to how we care for our bodies. In this conversation, we dive into the cultural rituals that shaped her, her perspective on feng shui and energy, and why younger generations are increasingly drawn to the wisdom of TCM. Whether you're curious about Eastern practices, navigating challenges in your own health, or looking to create more balance in your life, this is an episode you won't want to miss.
Hey, Sarah. I'm so excited for you to join us today. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Steph, it's an honor. Anything for you.
Amazing. Thank you. So we'll dive right into it. I know you've worn many hats over the years that we've known each other, from etiquette coach, TV host, entrepreneur. How do you describe what you're doing here and what you're doing today, and especially in the realm of wellness?
You know, it's really interesting. I was actually thinking about, like, when I think about the first decade of my career, which is sort of like the last 10 years of my life, when I graduated from Harvard Business School and I moved to Beijing to open etiquette schools, I was bringing the West or sort of global etiquette to China. And I saw it as etiquette is the utmost form of wellness in terms of knowing how to make how to put other people around you at ease, which in turn makes yourself feel at ease, which gives you a sense of belonging. And since the Netflix show came out in 2022, I've pivoted my career and I'm now speaking to you from LA. I'm based in LA now. And I'm bringing Chinese culture, Chinese wellness in the form of, you know, traditional Chinese medicine knowledge, or like Eastern culture, such as feng shui, bringing that to America. So it's almost like it's like different sides of the same coin. And to me, I really see the next decade of my life as bringing the best of Eastern wellness to women in the West.
That's amazing. I love that you're such a bridge between the two. And I think that there's so much misunderstanding, right? And I think you highlight a lot of that both in your show and your podcast. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in the Netflix show, which is called Mind Your Manners, it's a makeover reality show. I guess, you know, I just didn't think so much about it, maybe because I grew up in Hong Kong on herbal remedies with things like acupuncture and feng shui masters sort of running around my house since I was a little girl, probably the same as you and all other Hong Kong friends, and being taken to, you know, get your pulse read and like your tongue checked and all these things. So because I grew up with that, it's part of my DNA. And in the Netflix show, when I'm making over my American students, I just very naturally would take them to do acupuncture and ear seeding and drink herbal soups. Or when they invited me to their homes, I would very naturally say like, oh my gosh, you have like dried flowers in the house. Like that signals death. Like take them away from me. And what I didn't anticipate was that my audience really leaned into that. And as my Instagram following grew and, you know, my DMs were blowing up when the show came out, it was so interesting to receive, you know, multiple messages a day from people saying, your show opened my eyes to Chinese culture. Please recommend a TCM doctor, just like the one in the show. I live in Orlando, Florida. And I'd be like, interesting.
Yeah.
So that when 2022, that was when I was like, huh, it seems that Americans are really into this. And it wasn't just Westerners from America, it would be people from Poland, from Mexico, who would send me this kind of stuff. And so I thought, okay. And I kind of just like sat on it and like let myself like linger in it. Obviously, was responding to people. And it wasn't until then, right around the same time my Netflix show came out, I paired up with Annie, who's a dear friend of mine, she went into early menopause at the age of 35 because
Wow.
she had endometriosis. Western doctors gave her hormone shots, which put her into early menopause. And so her hair fell out, she had mood swings, and she experienced vaginal dryness. And nothing worked until one day she had a vaginal massage using a traditional Chinese medicine cream. And when she shared this with me, I was like, listen, Annie, you're probably not alone in this. And as we brainstormed, we thought, well, you know, how exciting would it be if we took what made us happy and healthy? Annie's Taiwanese and her family business is in traditional Chinese medicine. So if we take what makes us healthy and happy and share that with women around the world. And so that's how we thought of Antivorta, which is the t-shirt that I'm wearing right now.
Amazing.
And we spent 2 years developing and then launched a year ago a feminine care brand. And we have wash, wipes, and sprays for your vulva. To fight odor, dryness, and irritation. And it's all TCM formulation.
Wow. And tell me a little bit about this sort of formulation. I think that you touched upon it. You know, in TCM, there are those classic formulations. So I'd love to talk more about that.
Yeah. Well, ours is called Wu Wei Xiao Du Ying, which is like 5-ingredient decoction. You know, it's so funny when it's Chinese stuff is translated to English. It's like 5-ingredient decoction to eliminate toxins, basically. And it consists of 5 herbs, including dandelion, wild chrysanthemum, violet her, semi-aguilea root tubers. And it's actually a formula that's been used for over 2,000 years in China as a skin medicine for wound healing. So it's really good. It actually almost acts as like a natural antibacterial because of the formulation of the herbs, and it's good for skin cell regeneration. And if you Google it, you'll see a lot of studies done on Wei Xiao Du Ying with like things like acne or UTIs or yeast infections. And so we thought, what a powerful formulation. We did a lot of testing and that's now our base formula.
Amazing. And so what kinds of women are coming to you for this?
Well, it's interesting because me and Annie are mature millennials. I'm 39, she's 42. And, you know, initially I just thought it'd be, you know, other millennials like me. But actually, as the customer data came in, we realized that 70% of our customers are over the age of 45. And 55% of our customers are over the age of 55. 55 is like squarely menopausal. Actually, a woman usually goes into perimenopause when she's 45 and then menopause by the age of like 51. So a lot of our customers actually like postmenopausal, even. Vaginal dryness and vaginal odor are real issues. You know, I mean, you know, skin on our face dries and gets more sensitive as we age. And so skin everywhere else in your body will also.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, because we're seeing our skin, our facial skin every day, you're like, okay, I'm going to put on this serum, I'm going to do this oil, you have so much treatment for your skin and facials and everything, but you don't really think about down there, right?
Yeah. And interestingly, I think we were very lucky to be riding this menopause wave right now. As of last year, menopause has become a really big topic, at least in the States and in the West, where now, you know, Oprah's doing like menopause specials. Halle Berry, an actress I love, she went on to Trevor Noah's podcast and talked about her vaginal atrophy from menopause and how it was misdiagnosed as herpes. Yeah. Yeah. And then Naomi Watts came out and said, she publicly said she went into menopause at the age of 37. What's interesting is that Oprah, on her special, she said that women, there's some crazy statistic that like, I think over 50% of women in their 30s are already experiencing perimenopause symptoms. So we're all getting symptoms of menopause at a younger and younger age.
Yeah, actually, I was just talking to a girlfriend about this yesterday that, you know, she's mid-30s and she was like, I'm probably experiencing menopause, right? But you're so used to experiencing these different symptoms of, you know, irregularity and things like that, that she's like, it just becomes normal and you just move past it, right? But I do think your hormones are changing and they're coming earlier and earlier. I have girlfriends with older daughters and they're getting their periods at such young ages now. It's just super scary.
Yeah. So girls are getting their periods younger, age 10 or 11, which is crazy, or 12. In our day, you know, we got our periods at 14. and then women, like, you know, our generation are going into menopause earlier. And if you think about it, my mother never mentioned a word about menopause. Like, I had no idea what she was going through. You know, our grandmothers, like all these generations suffered before us. And to be honest, I believe that even I'm 39 now, I believe that since I was 32 or 33, I was probably already experiencing hormonal disruptions. Like, for example, I used to be able to drink coffee anytime I wanted. And then literally like overnight, even coffee at 7 a.m. meant that I was tossing and turning the whole night. Same with alcohol. Yeah, like I used to be able to drink alcohol, no problem. Now I drink alcohol, like I can't sleep all night. And my periods are getting irregular. My periods also getting heavier, which is also a sign of peri. And and it's really, for me, it's really the sleep disturbance. And I think that I used to blame it on all these other things without like, because I didn't understand, in my mind, it wasn't even, I didn't understand what I hadn't even heard the term perimenopause until a year ago.
No, I agree. I was like, what is perimenopause? I had to Google it and I was like, is this a thing now, right? Because there's so many different stages that, you know, people are now putting labels on, right? I was like, I had never heard of this before.
Yeah, and menopause is technically the 365th day that you go without a period. But it's not like you go from having 12 periods a year to suddenly getting none, right? It's like a graduation process. So perimenopause is like, is that stage in between where you're getting 10 periods and then 9 and then like 6 periods a year and, you know, all the other fun stuff.
Yeah. Wow. I think that, you know, and you talked about in the US, people are talking about it. And I think that over here, you know, in Hong Kong, people are talking about it more and more so, right? In our grandmother's generation or in our parents' generation, it's something that was, you didn't talk about it, it's maybe taboo, but I think today here, women do want to get together, they want to support each other, right, through these stages. And maybe, you know, go back a little bit and talk about a bit of the rituals of teas and soups and TCM. What was that like growing up?
Yeah, well, the great thing about growing up in Hong Kong is that you have soup with every meal. And it's always home-cooked soups. You don't even think about it. You start your meal with soup, right? And so soup is the first thing that's placed on the dinner table. And, you know, there's like ukai, right? There's like black chicken. And then there's like all sorts of roots. And there's like, you know, ginseng. There's all sorts of good stuff. I think I didn't know how to appreciate it when I was younger. And then going through my 20s when I was living in New York City and going to business school, I definitely didn't make any soup. It wasn't until I moved back to China in the last 10 years, really got in touch with all the TCM acupuncturists, like Ai Jiu, you know, moxibustion, all that stuff, and learning how to use medicine as food and how to make myself these little like TCM concoctions. I mean, it's just so much part of daily life in China. Like everybody who goes to the office, I remember all of my staff, they'd all have their baowenbei, like their hot flask.
Yeah.
And they'd be just only adding hot water and they would be throwing in goji berries, slices of ginger, and red dates. Yeah. And it was just a thing. Like everybody, even men were drinking this stuff too, right? It's like, and I was like, this is so fascinating. And slowly, like, that's when I became much more conscious about TCM and about what I could do for my body. And all my girlfriends as well, they're all Western, you know, grew up in China, all Western educated, all came back and all like only drinking hot water, all doing like Tui Na, Chinese medical massage, religiously, like a couple times a week, all doing their foot soaks. When they'd look at me, the first thing they'd say is like, oh, 亲爱的,你是不是上火了? Like, you look like you have extra heat on you. And I'd be like, what does that mean? And even like walking around my house, I used to walk around barefoot all the time. And all my Chinese girlfriends were shocked. They'd literally be like, 亲爱的,你这样会受凉, like you'll get like damp cold if you continue doing that. And so now I just religiously wear slippers because I don't want cold invading my uterus, you know? Yeah. And every morning I make myself a little drink, which I recently put the recipe up on my Instagram, everything out of my rice cooker. I even like fry eggs out of my rice cooker. And I make my soups there because, you know, living in the States, it's like, it's not like the same kind of support that you have living in Asia.
Yeah.
And so, as you know, and so in the morning, I also make my Chinese drinks in the rice cooker where I just put in hot water, throw in, you know, my slices of ginger, my goji berries and my red dates, cook it for somewhere between 20 to 30 minutes, pops open. And that's what I'm drinking.
Amazing. I love that. I think that, You're right. In the US, you're less supported, right? And you really ought to DIY and prep for almost like the week, right? So I think that's similar. When I was living in New York after college, I mean, in college, nobody makes soup. Like, I didn't make soup. I think I missed it, but that's the last thing I'm doing, right? But when
you don't think about it even in college.
Yeah, I didn't think about it. I was really probably living very unhealthily. And it wasn't until New York that you're like just tired. I was in banking and you're like, I miss soup, right? And it was, but I didn't have time to make soup. So I bought this like large, a slow cooker, and I like dumped everything in. And I was just like, all right, I'm just gonna turn it on 10 hours and like let it slow cook. And it would last me a week. I must say, looking back, it wasn't very good, but I was like, I just need something warm. And I think that that's similar to, you know, you having that ritual in the morning, boiling your herbs and your hongzhou, your red dates and your goji berries. It's something easy that like really nourishes the body.
Yeah. And, you know, for TCM, it's important to have warm and hot cooked foods. And there's nothing more nourishing than like hot soup.
Yeah. Especially after you travel. That's my go-to. I crave that hot, warm soup after any like sort of long haul flight.
Yeah. And rice for me.
I'm like a noodle.
I'm like a big rice. Oh, you're a noodle girl.
I'm a noodle girl.
I gain weight with noodles.
Really?
I have to eat them
sparingly. That's why you're doing your congee, right?
Yeah. To lose weight, right?
Yep. I'm a pure noodle girl. I feel like that's the last thing. A wonton noodle is like the last thing I eat before I board the plane.
At the Cathay.
That's true. Okay, so switching back, you know, gua sha, herbal lattes, Eastern rituals are really everywhere on TikTok, right? Why do you think people, especially younger people, why do you think there's this interest for Eastern rituals now today?
I think there are a couple things at play. Firstly, is that there is a great mistrust of big pharma. If you look at what's happened with, you know, the Purdue pharmaceuticals and how there was that big crisis and the Sackler family was, with the creation of OxyContin and all these other things. And by the way, I think like fentanyl is one of the biggest OxyContin, one of these are like some of the biggest killers in America right now in terms of like number of deaths per day, which is shocking. Like these are like man-made.
Yeah.
Prescription drug. So there's that. So distrust of big pharma and a move towards holistic. I also believe that, so Western medicine is about fixing symptoms and Eastern medicine is about prevention. And after COVID, Americans became much more tuned to that. They realized the importance of prevention. Almost everybody, maybe also because I'm living in LA, so many, almost everybody I meet here has an acupuncturist. Like they could be blonde haired, blue eyed, and they'll be like, yeah, my acupuncturist said like I need to do this.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And almost everybody knows somebody who couldn't get pregnant and then had acupuncture and now has two kids, right? So
yeah.
So like these things are working. People know realize that they're working. And then I do believe that Korea, K beauty, really helped out Asian beauty. Like Korea's done a lot for Asia. My American friends, their daughters are all singing Korean songs and they're like Caucasian and singing songs in Korean. They're finding like Korean men attractive, you know, thus Asian men attractive. And I believe that, so K-beauty made the American consumer receptive to Asian beauty. And there's a space for Chinese beauty in that.
I agree. I literally just had this conversation, like, is C-beauty a thing? Is it now? Is it coming? And then they were like, no, it's here. And I love that, especially like with all of our brands, right, coming together, leaning in and bringing Chinese medicine to the world. I think that, and especially what you're doing, right, making it accessible, I think, and talking about it in an approachable way. I think especially when I started Nuchi and I was Googling TCM and like herbs, and you would just find material that was so confusing and it was so unrelatable. And then they would be like the dampness of the spleen and the, you know, and you're like, I didn't even understand like any of that, right? Together, especially you hear about it in Cantonese or Mandarin, but then like to have it translated into English, you're like, dampness? What is that concept, right? So there's all that sort of jargons being thrown around. So I think that what you're doing is so, it's so powerful.
Thank you. And you know what? I mean, it's funny. It's like, okay, I'm doing TCM, right? That's one thing. But then also, like, my brand Antiborta does vagina care. So you can imagine, like, me as an etiquette expert then coming out and talking about, like, vulvas and vaginas, wash wipes and sprays for down south. You can imagine the eyebrows that were raised when that happened. Because between me and Annie, you know, Annie is an operator. Like, she used to be, so my co-founder for Antiborta, she's very badass. She used to be CEO of Stella McCartney Asia Pacific for 5 years. She used to run Shanghai Tang before that. And then after Stella McCartney, she was president of Diesel Jeans for Asia Pacific. So she's an operator. She likes being behind the camera, which, and so it was very natural that I would be the one, you know, promoting Antiborta. And it definitely, you know, I even had some friends who couldn't keep a straight face when I was telling them this, like, you know, good friends of mine who just like kept giggling. And I was like, why are you giggling? And they were like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just so funny that you're doing this. But, you know, I guess I like doing what people don't expect me to do. And hey, at the end of the day, like, a spade is a spade. You know, let's kind of break down or normalize some of these taboos and really focus on like what women need right now.
Yeah, completely. So, Sarah, last time you talked about vaginal massages, right? Have you, I mean, and I was rewatching, you know, one of Gwyneth Paltrow talking about steaming her vagina. Have you tried that?
So I actually have not done the yoni steaming.
Mm.
My co-founder, Annie, is really big into that. She was going to a yoni steaming place in Shanghai. And it's almost like they were like little rooms where they had the whole setup. And she found it helpful. And actually, I mean, that's a case for even if you steam your face, right? If you put like a bunch of herbs in a hot water basin and cover, right? Like cover your face with a towel. Even that also helps. And you know, if you do eucalyptus and you breathe, that helps your lungs. So she found it very helpful. I have not done that yet. I'm keeping it kosher with like wash wipes and sprays.
And I mean, can you find the vaginal steaming? And I'm sure you can find them all over LA. I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's LA. If there's one place in America, you can find them all over the States.
Yeah.
But I have to say, like, I really admire Gwyneth Paltrow because she was really the first one. She was so ahead of her time, like 15 years ago, to be talking about vaginal care. And, you know, 20 years ago, she was the first A-lister to have cupping marks on the red carpet.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and everybody's like, what is this?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, everybody. I go to Erewhon to do grocery shopping and there's like a bunch of men with like cupping marks, you know, all over. It's, everybody knows about it now.
Yeah.
She's very inspirational.
Yes, I agree. I think that that's, before it was, you know, it's Eastern wellness is such a mythical sort of mystical thing, right? And I'm really glad that it's finally having its moment where we can bring science and clinical evidence backing a lot of these remedies that have worked for you know, for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So Sarah, can you talk a little bit about feng shui? I think that I saw that in your last episode and I actually don't see a feng shui master because I'm like, okay, I know the general principles, but I also care about my design aesthetic, right? And I'm really scared the feng shui master is going to be like, no, you have to move that, you know, you have to move your bed to the other side of the house and you're going to have to put like a large mirror right in front of like the most ugly place. So how do you deal with that? What is your tips and what do you do for your home?
So, you know, the thing about feng shui is that it's about maximizing the upside of your life and minimizing the downside. So I believe that when you're born, and I'm also studying Kabbalah recently, and there's so many similarities between Kabbalah and feng shui, which is really fascinating. Kabbalah is the study of spirituality. I believe that when you're born, your destiny is pre-written. And actually, you have like multiple parallel destinies. So for example, when we're born, I feel that everybody that's meant to come into our life or everything that's meant to happen to us will happen. But it's about like us shifting our energy to either be at a better, like almost like a better movie. It's like parallel movies of like the same scenes, the same act. It's the same actors, same people coming into your life, but like different outcomes almost. And so the way I view feng shui is to minimize the downsides of my life and maximize the upside. At the end of the day, feng shui is really just, it should feel good because it's about the qi, right? It's about this life force and how it moves in your home. Like, you don't want your house to be an obstacle course, for example, you know. You want it to feel good and for you to move freely through it. So I'm not religious about necessarily consulting a feng shui master for everything. I did go through a period like that when I lived in China, which I wouldn't say is like too healthy, because usually it's like post breakups and when something goes wrong, right? Like, there's like some career issue or like post breakup, and that's when you consult your feng shui master and they come in, they tell you, oh gosh, like all these things are wrong and that's why that happened. But for me, like, I'm very certain of the principles. So for example, even the way my desk is right now, I have it in a command position, which means that my back has a supporting wall behind me and I'm looking out actually, or facing south, onto the I have a little balcony in front of me with a big window and a nice view. So that means that I have, like, you know, future prospects, it's an open view, and I can see the door, and I'm not like vulnerable. I'm not exposed to the door. I'm not vulnerable to, let's say, like, backstabbing or office gossip, things like that. So I know basic principles and I just go by those. And if there's some crisis, then I call my feng shui master.
You have your feng shui master on speed dial.
You bet. WeChat dial.
As well as my fortune teller.
Yeah. And psychic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, feng shui is so much a part of wellness today, right? Because it's how you feel and how it's your working space, it's your living space. And I think that it's so important to sort of have that in that, you know, positivity, zen, right? To have you really complement your life, right? As you said.
Yeah, I find that as I get older, energy is so important to me. Like, when I was younger, I felt that I wasn't so selective about even, let's say, people, friends that I hung out with, or how I spent my time, or having enough time for self-reflection, you know, like, or doing spiritual work. Like, I was really insensitive to a lot of that. And I think that is for most people when they're young, in their 20s. And I recently read that Carl Jung said something about how you don't really start living your life until 40, that everything before that is just kind of research and based on your ego and self-centeredness. And only when you hit 40 are you starting, like, you've kind of, all your ego desires, you realize, like, they're not helping you get to the next level. And so that's when you kind of do more reflection and spiritual work, and, like, you're more empathetic to people around you. And that life really just starts at 40 years old. And I'm 39, I'm turning 40 end of this year. And I really do feel that. I really do feel that. And since doing spiritual work in all shapes and forms, I'm so protective of my energy. And I think it's just really helped me get to, like, a better version of myself in everything that I do, whether it's like family, career, you know, social life.
I love that. First of all, you know, when I turned 40, I think that it was a scary milestone, because I always, you know, even on paper today, I'm like, oh my God, 40, that's like
midlife,
you know. Yeah, it's a scary number, you know, when you see it written, like my name and then 40 next to it, I'm like, oh. But actually it really feels like you're, you know, like, I can be much more authentically myself, right? Because you've done, as you said, all that research. I've tried on lots of different things. I've made a ton of mistakes, right? And I've tried on lots of different shoes, and now you're sort of feeling yourself and you can be yourself without, you know, unapologetically yourself, right? And also, I think that as we age, you're more in touch with sort of your, what you grew up with, at least for myself. I mean, TCM, when I grew up with it, I didn't think much about it, right? You're just like, oh, soups, teas, okay, I'm going to drink this, like, pear tea soup if I'm coughing, but you don't think much about it, right? And then my mom would be like, no, don't, you know, you can't sleep with wet hair, and, you know, or like, put on socks or something, right? Keep your feet warm. And I'm like, Mom, I don't want to wear socks, right? But nowadays, and I see it with my daughter, I'm like, Senna, you have to drink that pear soup tea. And she's like, it tastes weird, Mom. I'm like, drink the congee, you're sick. And she's like, no. And it's so much of my parents and my grandmother in me that it's actually very exciting to pass these traditions on.
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, because then you see yourself in your daughter, right? Where, like, you're like, oh, when I was that, yeah, I didn't care, I didn't appreciate. But then you know that, like, later on, when she reaches a certain age, like all this will come back to her and then she'll be really interested in it because it's her heritage.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's so nice to really fall back on it, examine it today in our lens today, right? And thinking about how all piecing all of that together. I mean, my parents were skeptics actually when it came to TCM. So I really grew up with Western medicine, but having that lens of like, okay, putting it together, East meets West. I think that today is sort of where we are, you know, and then you bridging that gap between East meets West as well and making it approachable and like bringing that science together and explaining it and really breaking it down for people. Yeah, I think that it's just so powerful.
Because, you know, back in our day, nobody really explained things.
No,
and even now,
like, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. And even when I go to my various doctors in China, I'm an inquisitive person. Like, I'll be like, why are you, last time you didn't put a needle there, how come you're putting it there this time? Like, what does that do differently, et cetera? And I have to say, like, my Chinese doctors in China, they don't do a lot of explaining. But what's interesting about the States is that my TCM doctors who are Western here, like, they do a lot of explaining. They're like, oh, because this is connected to that, and da, 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 da. And, you know, our generation, like, that's, we want to know. We're not just going to be satisfied with like, oh, because this is how it's done. Like, we want to understand how it's done, why it's done.
Yeah, I love that. So Sarah, what is a thing that your mom or your grandmother, what did you grow up with thinking, I would never do that? Like, I'm so not into that you would do today.
Well, they definitely ate a lot of weird stuff, right? I mean, you know, As we do, like dim sum, you know, we grew up eating chicken's feet before we even realize like it's chicken's, you know, before we even realize it's like
my, my kids love chicken feet. And my 4-year old, he's like gnawing away at the chicken feet.
And he probably doesn't even understand, like if he saw a chicken, he wouldn't be able, like a live chicken running around. He wouldn't put the two and two together, right? And so for me, and my mom ate everything. My grandma ate everything, you know, like frog, this, that. And I guess like, well, the one thing I cannot eat is frog. Yeah. I know it has like a lot of good properties, or even like turtles and stuff because they're cooling. Like, I just can't, I cannot bring myself.
With all the collagen and all that stuff, right? Cannot.
Yeah. Like I eat most things, but I do feel that part of my spirituality is I do believe like some animals have a higher consciousness, and that is controversial because who's to say like a turtle has a higher consciousness than a cow, because cows are very intelligent, right? So are pigs are some of the most intelligent animals. Pigs are more intelligent than dogs, but we don't eat dogs, we eat pigs. So I guess like selectively there are definitely foods that I know my family eats that I'm just like I can't bring myself to it.
So what do you do, what's your secret food that you're eating for your skin or for yourself? What is the one thing that you would recommend anybody
do? So the one thing that I take religiously, probably like every minimum, like every 2 hours, that costs nothing, is hot water. That's like my, and even now it's like within arm's reach, is my trusty floss.
And
woohoo. So yeah, like I'm just, you know, and of course every now and then I'll maybe like have, you know, like a shot or something, what if I'm going out or here or there. But 80% of the time, I'm just only drinking hot water. No lemon, no tea, because tea actually dehydrates you. So it actually has the opposite effect of hot water. And I've cut out coffee for a year now. But, you know, the number one key to health and good skin and all that stuff is to like have your digestive tract flowing. And the best thing for digestion is hot water, period.
I love that. And I swear by hot water too, especially in the hot, damp weather. Everybody is still reaching for hot water, right? Amazing. So thank you so much, Sarah. And for our listeners today, where do they find you and where do they find Antivorta?
Well, my Instagram is at Sarah Jane Ho, S-A-R-A-J-A-N-E-H-O. Vorta's website is antivorta.us, antivorta.us. And listeners are welcome to check out my podcast, which is called Mind Your Manners, just same name as my Netflix show.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Steph. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nutri Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.